All right, it's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk FM 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Monday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Lots going on in the sporting world tonight. We have our Super Bowl matchup, and by a large margin, it does not include the Indianapolis Colts, so we'll talk about their debacle, whatever word you'd like to use it, up in New England. Last night, it does include the Seattle Seahawks, a defending champion, Seattle Seahawks, who needed just about everything to go right down the last stretch, the last 4 minutes of the game and even into overtime, to even get into overtime, much less win the game. But an amazing end of that game in the early game during yesterday afternoon. But before we get there, we are going to go to the hardwood of Indiana basketball, as Tom Crean and his team went to Illinois, of course, without Hunter Mascara-Perea, and this time with a few days to practice for that absence. But they go to Illinois, who's missing a couple players off their team. People forget that Tracy Abrams is not playing for this team, but Ravonte Rice also hurt his wrist a week or so ago and is now out for them. He was their leading scorer. They had beaten Maryland on that home floor of whatever the heck they call that big spaceship in Champaign nowadays about a week and a half ago. Without Ravonte Rice. But the Hoosiers, in a game of runs, back and forth and up and down and drama both directions, they made the last one, and they made it count, winning 80-74. And Glass, they got back to what, oddly, they didn't do against Penn State, but they got back to what they've done a lot here in the last couple months, and that is they hit the boards. They hit the boards as a team, and they shared the ball, 16 assists, and a very welcome statistic if you're into statistics a lot that we see in this game that you'd like to see even more of, 9 turnovers. Again, they are not the most careful team with the ball, but when they don't turn it over tons and tons of times, they seem to keep themselves in the game, and offensively, they're continuing to put the pressure on these teams they play here in the Big Ten.
Well, they do, and the game was very interesting in the sense that it was up and down. And luckily, Indiana was on the upside of it, coming home 13-2 run to kill it off. And for once, it's Indiana's defense we can talk about in the waning minutes of that game. I think Illinois, Joe told me this morning, last field goal, 3:27 to go when the three-pointers hit in the corner. I don't know if that's right. I didn't look that up. I always trust Joe. Joe's right there sitting courtside. Good seats there in Champaign.
Three-pointer with 3:20.
3:20. There you go. That's the last field goal.
Two free
throws last points.
42 seconds.
Yep. Again, the last field goal. So Indiana's defense did what it needed to do down the stretch. It didn't foul. It didn't allow an easy three-pointer. It didn't allow anything. And Illinois was happy all day long, Dave. And this is where coaching does come into it. The best free throw shooting team in the league attempted 12 free throws at home because they settled for jump shots. Whatever it is about Indiana's defense, it forces teams to shoot more and more jump shots, which is very strange because when you've seen Indiana struggle, it's everything's going to the basket. There's no Hunter Perea. There's no inside, really, shot blockers or shot alterers or even guys that make you think twice. But for some reason, teams that, again, haven't just made some very good decisions. Indiana, a bizarre start again. It's just you just wonder. It almost looked like the Michigan State game. They come out, the crowd's on fire at that big arena. It's their sellout, first ever, biggest crowd they've had in the State Farm Center after their redo. And Indiana's sitting around with deer in a headlight. And what do? Start gunning 23-footers because, well, they're kind of open, and that's kind of what we do. And when they don't go in, you can see what happens. But Illinois went through some of the struggles that Indiana saw maybe in the Michigan State game. Illinois had two starters that had 0 points in a game, and you're not going to be,
including the biggest guy on the floor.
And again, Egwu's been there for 5 years or however long it's been, and he's just not a very good offensive player. That's it. And you saw yesterday the quickness of Williams, the quickness of Hartman, which is kind of those aren't words that you jump out with Colin Hartman, but he's active enough where maybe Perea isn't, where Egwu was a half a step late, where he had to reach, where his body was out of position, and that's what got him in foul trouble. Sadly for Indiana, when he fouled out Illinois, or was in foul trouble, Illinois played better. better.
That's I like them better on the floor.
That's what I was joking. Yeah, I said, hey, that's our best player today. Don't take him out, Gross. Leave him in. But Indiana took advantage of what, Dave? Well, they started to find out that making layups is easier than making three-pointers. And when you make some layups, all of a sudden those three-point chances are a little bit more open. And the Hoosiers did a good job of being patient. You can be critical, and I will be, because any team that gets a 21-2 run, put it on them on the road, usually doesn't win a basketball game. And they had a 14-0 run put on them and a 13-0 run put on them and an 11-0 run. You couldn't believe these swings going back and forth. So the neutral, it was highly entertaining. To the Hoosier fan, it was great, because at the end of the day, it was road victory number two, and that's how many road wins Indiana had all of last season. The math guy told me today, Dave, if Indiana goes 6-7 the rest of the year, that's 10-8 in conference play, and might be able to get their way into the NCAA tournament. I think that's way too far down the road to look at. Indiana now has won three straight games, which is exciting, because that has not happened in a while. And they did it because their big-time players scored, and Yogi Ferrell didn't take all the shots. In the time Indiana was beaten, remember, they were down 30 to Michigan State and lost by 20. Mm-hmm. Yogi Ferrell took the most shots today and led them in scoring. He hasn't led them in scoring in the four wins. There's something to be said about that.
Well, let's not blame the Michigan State game on Yogi, though.
That was an awful game all around. I'm not blaming it on him. But what I am blaming is,
but it is
Indiana,
a fact, yes.
Well, here's the fact, is Indiana didn't have balance. Everything fell on Yogi's shoulders. He was forced to take a lot of those shots because Blackman couldn't score. Williams couldn't stay on the court. Perea couldn't stay on the court. That wasn't a very balanced Indiana attack. But as you heard Joe Smith right before the top of the hour talking about Nick Zeisloff coming off the bench, 10 points. Max Holtzel played five minutes and got 6 points. Indiana's bench, 20 points. That's their best output in some time. And when you have that kind of balance, then James Blackman's not forcing shots, and Robert Johnson's not forcing shots. And Troy, how many jump shots did Troy shoot yesterday?
Not many.
In 10 attempts, I had one from about 14 feet.
Yeah.
8 of 10. It's not a hard formula to figure out. So Illinois, whatever Illinois does is not our problem. They're 12-7. They're 2-4. Okay? Indiana has to win on the road to, again, get to that level we're talking about. They did that, and Indiana did it because they didn't out-Indiana themselves. They didn't settle for jump shots. They didn't settle for not moving the ball. They didn't spurts. When you get a 21-2 run put on you, good things don't happen. I agree with that. But overall, at the end of the day, the offense was balanced, and the defense at the end of the game did exactly what they needed by not letting Illinois get any field goals. So when you look at it, that's the result you want is a victory. 80 points. Indiana doesn't lose a lot when they score a lot of points. So you saw it against Penn State. They struggled to beat a really average team against Illinois. That's not a great team, Dave. It's not. What they did is they've taken care of business. You can only play who the schedule says you play.
Look,
they've won three in a row.
We know going on the road in the Big Ten is difficult, no matter who it's at. And yes, Illinois is missing players. We're missing a couple players ourselves.
Ravonte Rice leads them in scoring and in rebounding. That's fine.
They've got a couple guys I think that can put it in the basket. Now, they're not up front, which is the ironic part, of course. Our weakness is not a particular strength for Illinois, but that is not where they were missing players, although they certainly showed up missing in 27 minutes, did Nana Egwu. But, again, to this team and what it has, it is what it is right now. And I don't know if Hunter Mascara-Perea is ever coming back for this team this year or not. Let's just be fair about that. He's got a kneecap injury. We've seen a couple of those in the last decade or so. They haven't been playing pleasant when we've watched him. But with this particular team, what you are seeing, and I think it's important that it gets mentioned, is better decision-making on the offensive end and still scoring 80 points, or maybe because of that scoring 80 points. I don't know exactly which
You're right.
But it's certainly a combination. And we talked about it last Wednesday. What was interesting to me about not having Perea and having Hartman play there is not that Hartman's going to suddenly be some dominant big man down there, but that he offered you a couple things on both ends of the floor that Hunter didn't. It's a different situation. It's not the rim protector situation, but it is a guy that knows better spots on how to get into position for rebounding. So he's not making a bunch of rebounds. He's in there. There's a bunch of bodies in there. They're getting it done on the boards most of these evenings. The other thing you have, of course, is you have a guy that can stretch the floor on the offensive side, which Hunter Perea, they weren't dumping it into him every time down the floor. But with Colin Hartman, they have to respect him now on a pick and roll, and they can't just all dive after Yogi or whomever's got the ball. They've got to look after him. He had one three in this particular game, two open shots. It's not that it's you know, Studley type production, but it's decent production. It's good production. It's a couple clutch spots where he put those in. The other thing about this team that you got to notice with the way they're playing, you mentioned Yogi, hasn't shot the ball well recently, has only had over 10 points once in the last five games, and that was the loss. He's become the distributor that was talked about before he showed up on campus, or maybe during that first year. He showed up that way again, 9 assists here. His assist to turnover numbers are fantastic right now. He's in a role right now where his ball isn't in his hands all the time. When it is, it's about creating, and he has been creating for other people.
Nope, and he still has just a little bit of that, I'm going to shoot it if nobody else wants to shoot it. And that's one thing, if Indiana can play through, they'll get even better, because you saw sometimes in those runs, it was dribble, 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 mm-hmm. dribble, dribble, 18-foot fadeaway. That's not how Indiana got those leads. That's not how Indiana stretched those leads. And sometimes, and this is what young and experienced teams do, they fall back into what's comfortable and what feels good. And sometimes when either Yogi feels he's not getting the movement from his mates offensively, or people aren't attacking and getting after the spots on the floor he needs to go to, sometimes he's a human being, he gets frustrated and is going to take things into his own hands. The less he does of that, Indiana has shown you. Dave, you just gave me his numbers. Mm-hmm. 4-1 without him jacking up 15 to 22 shots a game. And again, you have to have other guys make those shots to get assists. They did. James Blackman finally got out of his slump. And for a building Indiana hadn't played very well in since 2000, only one victory, all you can do is take your hat off and say good job. Does Indiana need to get better? Absolutely. The game against Penn State we talked about last week on Wednesday wasn't a work of art. Either was this one. You can't dig your holes like this against really good teams and expect to hit 3 or 4 threes in a row down the court. Other teams are going to defend you a little bit better. Other teams are going to look at that. Yeah. That's not Illinois' strength. Illinois is trying to figure it out. They've got sophomores and freshmen running around their backcourt as well, and Indiana put them to the sword. You know what? They fell asleep on guys. They didn't follow their scouting report really well. And when Indiana made their shots, Dave, they made the runs. When they missed their shots, they didn't defend very well and were trailing for a good majority of the second part of the second half.
In 4 Big Ten wins, Yogi is shooting 7 of 32.
Yep, and that can't continue, because you know what that is? Well, that can't continue. It has to get better.
You would think he will get better at that.
You hope so.
He has generally been a better shooter. It's good that he's not trying to shoot his way crazy out of that slump. But again, that's the other part of what makes this interesting so far in the Big Ten, is that they're doing this with Yogi not lighting it up from outside.
They
and they're doing it with James Blackman, who was great yesterday on both ends of the floor. Let's give him credit on the defensive end,
rebounds.
Too. Absolutely. But he has had struggles shooting the ball.
He's also a freshman. He's going to.
I understand that, but
are going to struggle.
You talk about how this team has to win. If I told you it was without Yogi and without Blackman sometimes in the last couple games scoring, you'd say, I don't know.
Well,
but it has been.
They have. And to be fair, they beat the teams, Nebraska, Penn State, Illinois. Ohio State was a good win. They were ranked at the time. Mm-hmm. It's not the upper half of the league. And until you start beating teams in the upper half of the league, when you play them, I don't think you can have that recipe to be successful. That's
I'm
going to
sure.
have to change.
I'm not sure there is an upper half of this league this
year,
to be fair.
There you go.
Let's take a quick break.
We shall.
3-3-3.
We'll see the upper half of the league on Thursday night.
2-6-6-5 is the phone number. Yes, Illinois beat them on their home court. So we'll see how Indiana can do on their home court against Maryland. But first, we'll talk about some of the things working the best for the Hoosiers when we get back. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. You're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk FM 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. Hoosiers 80-74 winners on the road at Illinois yesterday early afternoon. their second Big Ten road win of the year. Of course, their one road loss was by many, many points up at the Breslin Center. Here's an Illinois team missing Tracy Abrams for the whole season, missing Revonte Rice now for, maybe 2 weeks max now for this team that they've been without Revonte Rice, who is their leading
broken
scorer.
Broken left hand. Never a fun thing to do. No. Leading scorer and leading rebounder. And that's, again, you got to get on with it because everybody has injury problems. Indiana's got injury problems. Everybody's got injury
also.
Problems.
Devin Davis hasn't played all year, and now Hanamer Mascara Perea is out for a while. We're not sure how long, but to me, I think you have to look at the three-pointers and the times that they came for this team and talk about how that helped their offense on the road. But I never got the sense that this team was relying on three-pointers to get out of there. It hit some clutch ones, but it's not like
it's always when you make them. Well, it's not how many. You can make three in a game, and if you make them three in a row in the last 3 minutes, yeah, that could really turn the fortunes.
Their three-pointers came after they started getting to the basket. They started
absolutely
the game with
right.
a couple three-pointers.
The game opened up once they started getting layups.
They started with a couple three-pointers, missed them, even though a couple of them may have been decent shots, missed them. But it's James Blackmon getting to the basket that starts opening things up for them.
Right. It's another way to score. It's another way to get productive. They only shot 5 free throws in the first half, so that wasn't the case either. And again, here's what happened with Illinois. And let's be fair, Nunn hits his first 4, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's 4 for 4. They were 8 of 23 for the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. That's not, you know, that's
30%.
That's decent. But yeah. Again, that's what Illinois stuck on, and you saw what Illinois did. Yeah, they hit a couple. They hit 12 of them. Indiana hit 11, so it almost washed itself out. What was the difference in the game? The difference in the game, believe it or not, was Indiana's defense down those last 3 minutes because that was the last run that decided the game. You can point. I mean, I lost track of these runs. Indiana's down 14-3, right?
Right.
Then they lead 34-23.
Yep.
So there's the first half in a nutshell for you, and the second half, Indiana leads. They go out 50-40, and they're up 10, and then all of a sudden they're trailing by how many? The
69-63 or 61.
It's 61-52. That's a 9-point swing there. So yeah. it's just the waves and the graves just go back and forth. But what got out of it? It was Indiana getting some stops and getting some rebounds and making Illinois make bad decisions, which we haven't been able to say too much about this team defensively. It's mm-hmm. always been they'll outscore you last and have the ball to score last. But it was their defense. Blackmon and they forced a guy to the sideline right in front of the Illinois bench.
Right.
Instead of calling timeout, the guy tries to chuck a pass back. It's stolen by Williams. Goes for a layup. Mm-hmm. Indiana gets another. Blackmon gets out on a run out. This is the last 90 seconds. This isn't with 4.5 minutes to go.
Right.
This is winning time on the road when they were down 62-57. They hit a big three coming back. And again, they took some punches. But it just you never had the feeling that Illinois was going to knock Indiana out. That wasn't the key at all. You just saw them struggle.
There was that moment.
And if Kendrick Nunn didn't have the ball, you were like, anybody else, go ahead.
There was one moment where Eric Collins about lost his voice. And the
place got hot. It was loud.
That was about the last time.
They hit 2 or 3 in a row. Starks hit a couple. He was 5 for 8 from 3. Nunn was 6 of 10. But the rest of the guys stunk. 1 for 9 from the rest of your guys. And when you have two guys, the Crosby kid played 18 minutes and didn't score. Egwu played 27 minutes. Did he score?
No.
No. You can't do
two rebounds, 6-11.
You can't do that.
Biggest guy out there by
far. And you can't do that at home because it puts too much pressure on your bench. But what the good news was for Indiana, they dug themselves holes and dug themselves out of holes. But that is living dangerously. And the effort that we've talked about from the Hoosiers, Dave, have we seen that 40-minute of basketball yet where you said, wow, that's kind of what it should look like?
Not perfect.
Nebraska,
no,
you got a 16-point lead going to halftime. It's 8.
Ohio State was pretty good after the first 4 minutes.
Was, but it's a 3-point game at the buzzer, and there's 3-point game at the buzzer against Penn State.
No, it wasn't a beautiful.
No, it's not. And that's the thing. So it hasn't been 10 to 15 point easy victories. Indiana's had to fight for everything. And the one thing you like about that is, number one, the results are going that way, 4-1. And number two is the more games you play like that, the more games down the road you'll be comfortable in those situations. That's the key. It was a tough fight at the end of the last 3 minutes at Nebraska. It was a tough fight the last 3 minutes at home with Penn State. Tough fight 3 minutes at home with Ohio State. And a tough fight in 3 games.
Yeah.
That's the point. The point is you can't replicate that in practice. You can't teach that experience to Blackmon, to Johnson, to Zeislav.
And New Orleans isn't going to give it to you either.
It's not. Well, Eastern Washington did. Yeah, they gave it to you. And Lamar gave you a little bit of that. But yeah. Georgetown did. You got an overtime game with Georgetown. Right. Didn't come out on top of that game. You had a tough game with Butler. You found out how to kill off at the end. So there have been flashes of brilliance. But to think this is a finished product yet, I'm not diving in that far because you've seen too much. You've pointed out, Yogi can't swing this way and that way. He's got to be in the middle. He can't swing.
If it gives me 8 or 9 assists a game, I'll take that.
But Yogi, remember, that number is inflated because there are times Yogi makes the right pass and guys miss the shot.
Oh, sure.
We saw that last year. So if Yogi only had 4 assists yesterday and the team didn't win, well, that's because those shots weren't made. Right. If he's getting the ball to the guys in the right spot, that's all you can ask him to do. You can't ask those other guys to put the ball in the basket. But, boy, it sure looks a lot easier when James Blackman's making jumpers, doesn't it? It sure looks a lot easier when Troy Williams has 5 dunks, isn't it? Those are, you know why those are good things? Because James Blackman isn't taking bad shots, Troy Williams isn't taking bad shots, and they go for 42 and 16 rebounds. That's exactly what you need. You're not going to get that every night, but the 16 rebounds you might.
333-2665 is a phone number. Look, this team came into the season short, small, up front. It came into the season young without a lot of experience, certainly as a group. It has gotten smaller up front. It has not gotten significantly tougher looking from a strength standpoint, and yet you've seen increases or a significant improvement in the rebounding. You're seeing some gradual improvement on the defensive end. Again, I'm not going to chalk it all up to being fantastic, because I'm sure a little bit of that is Illinois and kind of relying a little bit maybe too much on the threes for themselves early in that game.
We're the best three-point defense in the league, and we gave up 44% and won the game.
This was a team that was not tough last year when it came to big games. And you just talked about it a minute ago, what's going on right now. This team does not look like what it's doing right now, which is toughing out wins with a small athletic group.
Well, that's
that
not
can't play
change.
Defense. No, I mean, that's what it is, that's what it's doing.
That's not going to change. So they have to find a different way to play basketball.
Can it do it against Maryland? Can it do it against Wisconsin? Look, those are the only two teams that are starting to separate themselves in this Big Ten. That's the good news for Indiana, is that they've got to remain competitive with everybody else and see what happens against the big games. The other good news for this team and this program right now is they tend to do pretty well against big teams that come into this house, and that's what it's got coming up on Thursday. Can it do it against Maryland, a team that actually has guys up front that produce and a couple pretty good guys that outside that can hit them? I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful test for this team, because this team all of a sudden hasn't been just scoring lights out to blow people out of the water. It's been scoring and toughing people out, which is amazing to think about from the beginning of the season.
And we'll talk more Maryland, obviously, on Wednesday, but Maryland has way different parts than Illinois has, and that's there's a reason they're ranked wherever they are in the country, because they've beaten people. They hammered Michigan State on Saturday. Yeah. Hammered them. Why? Because they've got some guys that can play. And Michigan State, again, that's a team that you look at and you say, well, geez, they struggled. They're just 3-2, but they've won at Iowa, which is all of a sudden ranked in the poll. They beat Indiana, which is all of a sudden ranked in the poll. And their two losses are to Maryland in double overtime, and then they got smoked this weekend. But go look at Michigan State's next 6 games. They're going to be 9-2. And all of a sudden, you can't forget about Michigan State, because Indiana plays them one of the final games of the Big Ten season, if not the final game.
Penn State at Nebraska, at Rutgers, Michigan, Illinois, at Northwestern, Ohio State, at Michigan, at Illinois.
That's the first 6 or 6-0.
I don't see Wisconsin until March 1st.
They only play them once, I believe.
And they played Maryland twice, as you mentioned, lost.
So they're going
to
be 9-2.
They don't play IU until March 7th.
And they're going to be right in the thick of it. Yeah. So that's going to be one team we don't want to write off. I know you said it's not a very top-heavy league.
Right.
Michigan State's going to get really top-heavy.
I'm never going to write Michigan State off.
No, you're not. And with that schedule, there's no chance to, because the toughest games they have in there are at Nebraska and at where?
At Nebraska.
And at Northwestern.
Michigan at home. Illinois at home.
Karis LeVert out for the year.
Yeah, I mean.
That's just.
At Northwestern. Michigan. At Illinois.
Nope.
I mean, Rutgers shouldn't give them a game, but Rutgers beat Wisconsin at Rutgers.
It's at Rutgers. All right. Rutgers will be fine at home.
It'll be in it, yeah.
Tough.
No, it's not. It's not a hard stretch.
It's not a hard stretch. So that's, again, they're going to get healthy by that. Indiana's going to Purdue. Indiana's going to Ohio State. Indiana's got Maryland at home.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit tougher. So, again, it's 5 games in. After 5 games, the only thing you can be better is 5-0. Indiana's 4-1. Nothing wrong with that. The water gets a little bit deeper. Can they take the next step? And we've talked all season long. The journey is just going to be as interesting as the destination when this team gets done with it. Because Stanford Robinson, last game, after another, here's a little tease, 9 minutes of nothing.
Right.
9 minutes of zero.
Yeah.
Let me see. 1 rebound. Nine minutes.
Zeisloft and Hotzel showed up, and Stanford didn't. I mean, it doesn't have to be all of them every night.
Stanford got 9 minutes. and didn't give you anything. But that's the thing. If you get 6 points from Hotsel, that's great in 5 minutes. But again, you're going to need more bodies against teams with better players, and right. that's the thing that Indiana's going to have to try to find is some more consistency. And again, their calling card on defense is the best defensive perimeter 3-point defensive team right in the league. 44%, 12 threes made. Again, won the ball game. There are things Indiana needs to work on to get better. They're going to be tested in 5 tools against Maryland, maybe not 1 or 2 like they were against Illinois. No, but that's what makes it fun. Maryland's big game on Thursday night.
Much better team, much more rounded team. There's no question. And, as I mentioned, Thursday, 9 o'clock, it'll be a lot of fun.
Should because, be. That's why you play them. That's why you come to play here. Play
top competition. 10 teams. I mean, there's no question about that.
Wow, they moved up to 8 in one of the polls?
They did.
I saw them 12-1 and 8 in the other. All right.
We're in one of them. Hey. Both of them or whatever. We're 22 or 23, so we can all celebrate now. We got to take a
just
quick
beat
break.
Maryland. Who cares?
333-2665. Colts dropping in everybody's poll. We'll talk about their game at New England when we get back from the break. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming note, tomorrow night, live from Yogi's at the corner of 10th and Indiana, 6 o'clock, it's Joe Smith Sports Talk. You'll have behind the scenes at IU with Fred Glass. We'll also have Edgewood Hoops coach Dave Mahurin. And we'll be back with you Wednesday night, 6 o'clock. We're back to high school basketball Friday
Black
night.
And blue. That's what Coach Mahurin's on with this. I got Owen Valley coming to town. Notice the difference here. Chalk Talk, 7:30. The tip at 8. I believe the girls play before they do. Girls play at 6 before that game. So I'll give everybody time to overtime and get warmed up and everything else. So a little bit different than normal. And then coming up Saturday, baseball fans, you can start counting down the days. I think we got about 75 left to go. Reds Caravan.
Yeah, you can do that.
College Mall. 10:30 to 1:30, where you're your exclusive home for Reds baseball in Monroe County. Billy Hamilton's going to be there. Broadcaster Jeff Brantley's going to be there. I forget the other big front office guy. It's not Jockety, but it's his right-hand man's been in baseball for 100 years. But anyhow, Reds Caravan at the College Mall. Free autographs, posters, all that fun stuff. So if you're a big Reds fan, that'll make you feel like summer, at least for an afternoon at the College Mall. Dick Williams, that's the other guy who's going to be with everybody. And Glenn Bragg's a
former Red. He has been around forever.
Yeah, yes. And if that's the same Dick Williams that managed the Padres back in the days, my goodness, that is a long, long time ago. And, again, no football this weekend. We take the weekend off, and then it's Super Bowl 49 from Glendale, Arizona, February 1st. We'll get you the details on that next week when we're going to start taking pregame and all that fun stuff. But we will, I'm pretty sure, have the game on, right? We took the conference finals. We got to take the Super Bowl. There's no point in quitting now.
That's right. No, we'll have that for you. But that's a look at what's going on this week. 333-2665 is the phone number. Had the championship games. Of course, you listened to them here on WGCL yesterday afternoon and evening, although you might have turned off the evening game a little early, which I don't blame you for, as the Patriots just ran away with it. And to be fair, it was 17-7 at half, and the Colts very much in it after holding the New England Patriots to a field goal right at the end of the half there. You know, it looked early like it could be a blowaway. There was a big, big interception by DeQuell Jackson playing great. Really a mistake by Tom Brady. Should not be throwing that ball. Wasn't a good throw, and it wasn't a good decision anyways to be putting it in there. It is double coverage right there, and great play by Jackson. But the Colts take the ball 95 yards down to the other direction and score on a one-yard Zerlon Tipton run. I'm sure you had him in your postseason fantasy team.
Thanks to a Vince Wilfork penalty and another penalty on third down, which legal contact, 5 yards, automatic first down.
But the Colts very much in the game at that point.
Yeah, they didn't look out of it.
Giving up something right before half was a little disappointing, but they held it to a field goal. Yeah. Not a lot of damage.
21-0, the Patriots, game's over.
Yeah, Patriots get the ball to start the third quarter, and you can pretty much forget about it at that time. They absolutely steamrolled.
Well, you had to get off the field, and you didn't get off the field, and that was the problem. They went right. Didn't they go right down and score?
Yeah.
So there you go.
9 plays, 87 yards, 5 minutes off the clock.
24-7, and you're in a deep hole, and the game plan starts sipping out the window. But I do give the Colts credit, though. They did make a stop at 14-0, because that's 21-0.
That's big time.
Your halftime speech is dead. Everything else is. And then they go and turn around and go, 90 yards, like you mentioned?
Remember, New England had gone up and down the field already.
Yes, he did.
They got a fumble and that they scored off of. They went 60 yards for their next touchdown. They were all the way down the field again. This pass is going into the end zone, if you will. mile for, or inside the 10, certainly.
No, it was at the goal line. That's why he only got out to like the 10 or 12 yard line.
Yeah.
Because he did run it back. But the good news from the Colts was they did stick with their game plan at 14-0 down. You saw a very nice balanced drive getting out of their own end, moving the ball down the field. It wasn't a hero play where they took a 70 yard TY Hilton shot to open them up, but that was about it. And you got to give the Patriots credit, because everything the Colts did last week against Denver, they got none of it. They got no push up front. They got nothing to stop. LeGarrette Blount's their boogeyman. They should have picked him up off waivers. The heck with
Jonas Gray was too. It doesn't matter at this point. They're just getting physically manhandled up front.
They were, and you knew that going into it. It would have been an Andrew Luck miracle, a la Russell Wilson, if that was going to be the case yesterday. But it wasn't. There wasn't enough stuff for the Colts to do, and it's not surprising. When Joe Wright is playing right tackle in a game of that magnitude,
but
you're not going to beat anybody.
You're right. We said it going in. I mean, physically, they didn't match up the last couple times they played with them, but the whole problem with it, if you're looking at it from a Colts fan standpoint, is two things. You knew, as a Colts fan, and you had to know this as the coaching staff, of course, also, you knew that they've physically manhandled you the last couple times out. You also know that they're getting really gimmicky, and I don't use that as a whole horribly derogatory term right now, but getting gimmicky with these who's eligible and who's not eligible and how you're using them kind of thing. Okay. They don't always do that. You see it a little bit in every game, but you don't see them doing quite as much as the Patriots are getting credit for right now. You knew both of those things were coming at you this weekend, and they got steamrolled on defense, and they gave up a pass play to an eligible offensive tackle. So
Gronkowski,
how you walk into this and don't
first pass in the third quarter.
Yeah. And don't address both of those situations going into it at all. And they both burn you all day long.
I think we talked about it last Wednesday. What are you going to do? You're going to stop Gronk? You're going to stop the outside guys? You're going to stop the running game?
They started the game in their pass defense.
Right. And
two defensive linemen, two linebackers, and got pretty well pushed around.
They did, and because New England was a better team, and I don't think anybody argues
that.
Well,
there's no question about that.
Well, what you didn't have in Denver last week, you didn't have Cribs got lit up, but didn't fumble, or ruled not a fumble, and he fumbles this time. Dan Heron drops a 40-yard pass down the sideline. It hits him in both hands, not one hand, not stretching, hit him in both hands extended. He dropped two out of the backfield that could have gone for anything because there wasn't anybody in 10 yards of him. Again, against the Patriots, you can't do that. Against a team that you can't stop, you have to, A, keep your defense off the field for a little bit and give them a break. You just mentioned the two drives and how much time they took up and how many yards they took up. That was a third drive where they got the DeQuell Jackson interception, right? So the defense is out there hung out to dry because you can't get your first downs because nobody can catch the ball. And the other part was the offensive line that we know has been bad all season long. It did not help that Godster Chehalis twisted his ankle late in the year and could not play in the playoffs. Did not help anything. He'll be back next year. That does help. But when Andrew Luck has no time and nowhere to throw it, I don't know what else you want him to do. Yeah, he forced a couple in there that led to interceptions. But when it's 24-7 and 31-7, I don't care. You got to try to make a play. He's not killing you. He's not killing you at 17-7.
His two interceptions were out routes.
They were. And they were bad. And is it miscommunication? Is it a wet football? Whatever it is, it didn't matter at the time because the Colts were dead. They weren't coming back. They could have. The only thing that would have happened with the Colts, they would have had to have a couple strip sacks and a punt return. That would have involved getting pressure on Brady and getting them to punt, and neither one of those things were happening.
No, I mean, the only good news, like you said, about the interceptions is that at that point it's already a 3 or 4 touchdown game. They're bad passes to give up on those interceptions. I mean, again, if you're forcing it down the field to T.Y. Hilton, you give up a 40-yard pass,
punt,
it's intercepted.
Yeah, just like they did against Denver.
Okay, let's not forget Adam Vinatieri is now had his first defeat in a championship game and missed a field goal, by the way, which
shank
didn't help because, look, at that point, it's 7-0.
Yeah.
I believe it's 7-0. Yes, it's 7-0. You got a chance to at least get on the board.
You do. Or you punt him deep and hope your defense can get him a little stuff there.
Very little worked well.
But I mean,
special teams for this team has been very, very good all year long. Vinatieri's been great. McAfee's been great. Return game has been better. I won't say great, but it's been better. Certainly with Cribs involved, it's been much better.
And you saw
this time, not
you saw
so much.
Cracks in Denver that didn't cost you.
All right.
And you saw stuff in New England.
How about everybody suddenly taking off all their visors in the rain? Blount had one. He took that off. Cribs had it on when it hit him in the face.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fogged, causing everybody problems.
You're fogged up and no place to go. But I don't think anybody was tremendously surprised when Tom Brady goes out and has any play he wants in the playbook – it's getting 7 yards. There's you're not going to beat them, and that's what happened. Goofy formations, no goofy formations. When you hand the ball off, how many times to LeGarrette Blount?
It was 40 total rushing attempts. 30 of them went to Blount for 148 yards.
Well, that's 5 yards of carry.
And there weren't a whole lot of huge run plays. It was just constant.
Seven, just good, eight.
Yeah, just, and it was a constant reestablishment of the line of scrimmage.
Second
and
six,
that's
he gets
when
seven.
You, when you watch an offensive line do that over and over and over and over, that's you've lost the game right there. They're just beating you up front.
And the Colts just didn't make enough big plays. The one big play they made really put a Band-Aid on a wound that needed a tourniquet. It just stopped the inevitable. Right. DeQuell Jackson's play was a nice play. I mean, good for DeQuell. Mm-hmm. He was in the right spot. He made the play. The ball hit him in the hands. You have to make that play, and he did it. But that was the problem. The Colts couldn't find anything else either down the field or in pass protection or out of the backfield. And, again, when you rely on – I'm going to call it a walk-on, just for lack of a better term, at right tackle, a walk-on.
Yeah.
Two running backs that are essentially walk-ons, guys that you don't need to play,
right,
that are required to play.
Mm-hmm.
You got problems, and then one thing too, you got to give this is a fact. Bjorn Warner didn't dress for this game. Number one draft pick did not dress for an AFC title game. And Chuck Pagano's in his thing today said, "Yeah, we needed an extra defensive back." You didn't need an edge rusher on Tom Brady? You needed a defensive back?
How about defensive linemen, the way you're getting pushed around?
Goodness.
That's what
I
don't understand about it. They knew they'd been manhandled.
Well, he just tells you what his performance has been. It's been non-existent.
They put their eggs in the basket that we think New England's going to change everything they did the last couple times, and we're going to go the opposite direction. They came out in nickel, and again, look, if you want to put Vontae Davis on Gronkowski, it's the best move they had all day long on both sides of the ball.
He caught his first ball in the third quarter.
I mean, that really was putting Davis on Gronkowski.
Receivers aren't very good.
No, that's great. I mean, that's fantastic. But at the end of the day, you got shoved around up front. And look, it's a physical game. It's a difference. There were two other factors that may have determined the entire thing, and we'll talk about them when we get back. Footballs, gimmicky formations.
That's the New England Patriots.
The Patriots cheated their brains out to beat the Colts. No, they just pushed them around. But we'll talk about those goofy little things when we get back because they're kind of funny. And we'll be back in just a couple minutes. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. You're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Again, quick programming note, tomorrow night, Joe Smith Sports Talk live from Yogi's at the corner of 10th and Indiana at 6 o'clock here on WGCL. He'll have IU Athletics Director Fred Glass talking about IU behind the scenes. He'll also have Edgewood Hoops Coach, Boys Hoops Coach Dave Mahirin. Looking forward to the Friday night game against Owen Valley. So that's tomorrow night. And, of course, we'll be back Wednesday, 6 o'clock also. 333-2665 is the phone number. Colts took a waxing yesterday. 45-7 was the final score in New England. And two stories have come out about New England here in the last day, really, I guess, a week or so for the one. I want to put the one on the field story to bed right away. Anything with gimmicky, goofy formation type stuff just needs to stop. It's part of the game. It's been part of the game forever. It is not a new thing. Teams do this all the time. Teams put in jumbo packages all the time. Anytime there is a field goal,
couldn't even get it right. They had a penalty where they had two guys that didn't report going in the pattern, and Walt Coleman had to tell you. And Belichick argued it.
Anytime there is a field goal or an extra point, you almost always have somebody that reports into an eligible position
because
they use big guys up there. It happens all the time.
But
now,
here's the thing.
Not a lot of teams only put four actual offensive linemen on the field in those formations.
Seven men must be on the
line. So they are trying some different things than a lot of people do right now. But having these situations and having ineligibles and eligibles and that sort of thing, it happens all the time. It's a great, smart thing for New England. It's a little tricky. There's no question about it. But it's something else to think about. And it's why these guys, and this coach in particular, is lauded as one of the smartest out there, one of the hardest out there as far as research is concerned.
Wow.
They do the work. They have these things.
They do the work, and sometimes their work
This isn't stepping on your toes.
Sometimes their work's illegally videotaped, and you know every play that's going on, and you beat a team that where you're a 10-point underdog, and you beat them handily.
They've pushed some illegalities, and that's where the other one that comes in.
But here's their problem.
Deflated football thing.
That's right. And their problem is if they don't like people talking about what they did in the past or they've done in the past, don't do it.
Keep it in bounds.
Well, now you've done it again, and all you're going to hear for 2 weeks now is, did they cheat to beat the Colts? And again, this is the same team that has not won a Super Bowl since it was found out that they had taped the workouts before the Super Bowl from the St. Louis Rams at the time. So I don't have any sympathy for New England. None. None at all. Belichick's a jerk. He's a great football coach. Yeah. I don't take away from that. He's a jerk with the press.
When
He's
you
a jerk
keep
with
pushing
everything.
The envelope, you can't question when people call you on it and say things about it.
And he's the same guy that put Tom Brady on the injury list for 7 years, even when he wasn't hurt. So he just, you know what? That's fine. And when you win, and when you get beat and you get your nose rubbed in it, I don't want to hear about it from New England fans, and I don't want to hear it from Belichick. If you go out and someone beat you, like how many times Baltimore, they didn't this year.
Right.
They didn't this year, even though they were up 14-0 and 28-14. They didn't beat them. They beat them at home this year. They didn't. No. They're 2-2 now. But again, when those guys come out afterwards, this, that, and the other thing, well, again, it's hard to give any sympathy or empathy for a team like that. That, again, if they think it's worth it because they're just going to lose a draft pick or two,
right,
that is violating not only the letter, that's violating the letter and the spirit, and I don't have any time for that. That's me.
That factor has nothing to do with this particular game.
Not yet.
However, you're exactly right. I you have these rules in place, and they are pretty cut and dry.
To ensure competition is played on the up and up.
The eligible things all over the field with different players,
that's
completely within the bounds.
Not complaining about
smart.
They don't take draft picks away because you manipulate a rule on the field during a game.
Right.
In that sense.
That's correct.
You are trying to manipulate the outcome of the game.
They lost a first-round draft pick for Spygate.
They should have.
And got
and
fined.
You know
what
else they lost? The tapes. Nobody could find those, and they still haven't. Nobody really knows what was on those tapes, so that's another layer of bullshtine that no one wants to deal with. And if you're not a Patriots fan, if you're a St. Louis Rams fan, and you don't get any answers from the NFL, who are you going
to
root for?
It seems to always come up around the Patriots.
Why?
We're not talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars doing this.
We're talking about the Texans?
Right, exactly.
We're talking about the Chargers?
We're talking about one team.
You're not talking about one team and the same head coach. Throughout the entire time,
right.
The same ownership group throughout the entire time. The only thing that's different is Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel's not there anymore. That's
looking,
about it.
Looking at the that's opposite coast, though, their opponent in the big game, the Super Bowl, is the Seattle Seahawks, who overcame a 19-7 deficit in the last couple minutes, including an onside kick and a crazy two-point conversion where Russell Wilson just chucked the ball straight up in the air. Look, quarterbacks get credit for winning games, especially if they've got touchdown passes in the late in the games, and they should. He had four interceptions in this game. His wide receivers were bad for a long time. He was bad for a long time.
His two-point conversion play was bad.
When they finally remembered to run the ball because they had a physical domination up front is when they got back into this game. And then finally, Marshawn Lynch just went nuts down the stretch. Russell Wilson finally made a couple plays for the team. He'll get credit for it, but it's 16.3 or whatever his ranking was. It's one of the worst in playoff history.
And
certainly
Seattle,
a win.
And Seattle fans will tell you, well, what about the two passes in overtime that led to the touchdown?
Great. Well, that's were great.
That's you got your fifth chance, and you came away with it. But that was one of the most bizarre endings.
Yeah,
Mike McCarthy, you got three timeouts you're taking home with you. You've got so many different issues to talk about. We could do a whole 2 hours on that. Coaching decisions. What do you do with this down and distance? What do you do with the best quarterback in the league under center and you run the ball three straight times? Oh, my goodness. Can you get one first down and kill the game off? Or you want to give Seattle a chance? Can you recover an onside kick? Can you bat the kick out of bounds? Can you do anything except what you did? How good was the defense on the two-point conversion play? Guy throws a Hail Mary. The defensive
back stands there and watches
like the Seattle guy jump and catch it.
Didn't that guy have an interception or two earlier in the game, too? Suddenly he can't make a play on the ball?
Tackle the guy and give him another two-point conversion try instead of it was awful.
It's
and you
crazy.
Don't expect that from a big-time football team, but that's what you got. And Seattle has a chance to defend their championship. First team, what, Dallas, 93, 94, somewhere in there?
Well, now they're America's team for the next 2 weeks.
They are.
We got to take
Richard Sherman, America's team.
We got to take off, folks. We'll be back on Wednesday, so tune in then. Remember, folks, we'll be back on Wednesday. You've been in the zone.